I'm going to read, first of all, tonight in the book of Psalms, Psalm 33. We introduced the subject of parenting as husband and wives together just briefly at the close of the meeting last night. And the fact that a proper biblical relationship between parents and children, in that relationship there will be love and gentleness and caring on the part of parents, but there will also be some honor and obedience towards parents on the part of children. And in the family reading at Mr. and Mrs. Wayne Friesen's place this morning, Mr. Friesen read to his children a couple of verses that really stuck out to me in relation to this subject that we're going to speak about now. So I'm going to read them to you. In verse 10 of Psalm 33, "The Lord bringeth the counsel of the heathen to naught." So you will find psychologists and people that are trained, they would say, in raising children. Oftentimes they will change their teaching. They will change what the Bible teaches. They will try to make things fit a modern society that doesn't have a place for God. But that counsel will be brought to naught. But notice this. "The counsel of the heathen to naught, he maketh the devices of people." Those are the tricky things that people use to try, and buzzwords that they have, you know, like significance. Or, well, we had a little girl one time, was with her father one time, and she was very upset with some of the older people. She said, "They don't show me any respect." Well, now, she was about 4 or 5. I don't know exactly what she intended them to do. But the counsel of the Lord standeth forever, the thoughts of his heart to all generations. So we're speaking of things here tonight that I believe are unchanging. God chose to give you children. Be thankful. They were his choice for you, and you are his choice for them. Be appreciative of the fact that God has allowed that. Children are not a mistake. And so, we're not trying to say that there are people that can be perfect in their child raising. Every child is too much like his father or mother to be perfect. And so don't worry if they're not perfect, because we aren't either. There are no perfect children and there are no perfect parents. And this is not a perfect world, and we are not living in a perfect day and age. So we don't automatically know everything about all or any of our children, really. And they're all different. But we can learn. And so I have a list of 10 things, if that paper that you have is nearby, I have put a list of 10 things that are contrast between the way the Bible teaches and the modern thought of the world today. See, the Bible does teach parents are responsible for their children. We'll be reading that shortly. And so parental authority is a biblical practice. But there are those today that say if you try to control your children, let them express themselves. If you try to control them, you're a tyrant. And so teachers sometimes will give them a ball of paint or something to throw against a wall, and that's supposed to be art. Or they'll let them bang their head against the wall. That's expression of their inner emotions. And they have all these kinds of ways that they are using to try and make children feel significant. The Bible teaches that control and obedience is a trait that we should expect from our children. And they should be willing and learn to bow to authority. They won't do it happily. Children will bow to authority kicking and screaming the same way as you did, and the same way as I did. unless you come from one of those very, less than the gene pool of your family, there is a very placid line there. Some of us don't have that. Others may. But children don't have the rights of grown-ups. Grown-ups are responsible for their children. You can't pass things over and say, well, we'll just let the children do what they want. That's not right. And discipline and love are two things that go together. A person who never controls or establishes discipline in a family really doesn't love their children. We are going to be looking at the subject of discipline by and by. Maybe not tonight, but another night. But the six means or rules of discipline that are linked with assembly life, they work exactly the same in family life. Discipline has a pattern that it follows, beginning from the very simple word no or yes to more serious discipline, all the six of them in order. Sometimes people I don't know how you'd say it. They don't think that we should take steps to prepare our children for life or for living. Let them learn from the professionals down in the school or the psychologists who have all the answers. But parents, back off. We had a serious thing just a little while ago in Newfoundland. A lady was in the hospital in Cornerbrook, and she was a Christian lady, and her daughter, she taught her daughter to give thanks for the food when she was a little girl going to school. Kindergarten, she told her to always give God thanks for her food. Didn't give her a little poem, like, bless the food which now we take, and bless us all for Jesus' sake, but she taught her to give thanks for the food. And so the little girl did, and she always did it out loud. Not real loud, but, you know, so that her friend girl sitting beside her could hear. Before long, there was three or four little girls, and they, every time they would sit down and have their, they didn't have a cafeteria, they just brought their own lunch, and they sat down and they opened their lunch, and they would give thanks, this little girl would give thanks for the food. That's a number of years ago. Now she's in high school. And this year, first at school, why she sat in the cafeteria. She had moved into the high school now and sat in the high school cafeteria, a new place, and she bows her head, and the same group of girls are hanging out together, and they're all sitting there, and they all put their head down, and she gives thanks for the food. And as soon as she's done, tap comes on her shoulder. You're not allowed to do that here. And the girl said, what? I'm giving God thanks for food. Yeah, but that's offensive to some of the people in the school. You're not allowed. That was the principal. Well, now what are you going to do? You're not allowed to give thanks for the food? At a cafeteria out loud? And what is this new Christian lady going to say to her child? And how is she going to help her? There are times that we do have to go against what everybody around us thinks is okay. There are times when we have to go uphill when everybody else is going down. We have to go upstream when other people are going down. We'll have to teach our children the fundamentals of Christian life. I learned how to be a Christian long before I was a Christian. My parents brought me up as a Christian, even though I wasn't born again. And they taught us the respect for the Lord's Day, respect for the Bible. They taught us respect for the name of our Heavenly Father. But I had to someday come to know Christ personally myself. But I knew about God from day one. And I'm thankful to God for that. And my father before me, and my mother before me, and their parents paid a cost. And so you need to understand that as parents, we have a natural duty to train our children, and that we have a natural right to demand obedience from our children. Our home is basically the classroom that you and I are training our children in. And when we let them go out, then we have rules that we enforce. I recall, now mind you, I know, I'm from a different age. But I still expect every man that sits down at a table in our house to take his hat off. And I expect every man that sits at a restaurant with us and to take their hat off, even if it's my grandson. He came one time, one of my grandsons, and I don't know what he was trying to prove, but he left his hat on when we sat down at the table. And we waited. You know how silence works? People get real uncomfortable with silence, don't they? And we're sitting at this table silent, nobody's moving. And my grandson is looking. And I went, and he took his hat off. I don't know whether he's testing me. He was a teenager. But he always takes it off now. There are certain things that we have a responsibility to train our children. One of them is in respect and dignity and righteousness and right words. And so the home is our classroom, and you and I make rules, and we will have to enforce them. And as husbands and wives together, you must come to a conclusion how you are going to conduct yourself in your home. I have to tell a little bit because I was raised polite in a polite home, a farm home, but polite. But we were on a boat in Newfoundland preaching the gospel, and the table was about this wide, and there's six men, and they're sitting around this table that's just 1 foot wide. And so everybody, you know, we're here eating like this. So if you wanted something, you reach for it. You know, you didn't. So I went home one time after being on this boat, and I reached for something in the table. Boy, my mom caught me across the back, and I was 22 years old, and with the back of the knife, she says, "You're not on a boat now, you're in our house. Behave yourself." Preachers can learn pretty fast when their mothers do that. She said, "You're not on a boat now, this is our house. You behave yourself." And the reason why I'm passing this on is your children are going to learn a lot of things before ever they leave the doors of your house. But you and your wife or you and your husband need to be on the same page when it comes how you're going to train your children. I left that list there. I'm not going to go over all that list for you. But understand this, that your children need to learn the value of work. And they'll learn that at home. They won't learn it at the trade school. They'll learn it from you. They'll learn it how you work. They'll learn what you expect when you work. They'll learn how to do it effectively. They'll learn how to do things well from you, not from the counselor down at the high school who's at the home ec class or whatever it is that people do. But they will learn those things from you. Those are the places where they'll learn. And understand that, now here I'm going to step out from an old man's view. Older man's view, pardon me, not old, older man's view. Play is a reinforcer of work. Pain before pleasure is a good rule to follow. Expect your family, expect your children to do something that's meaningful so that, and encourage them and help them and teach them how to do it so that when the job is done, you can say, "You did a good job. Now you're free to go and play with your friends." But you'll find a lot of people now won't do that. And so you and your wife or you and your husband are going to have to come to a decision. What place does play have? I believe in play. I still play. I play with kids. Play with grandkids. But I believe in work first. And I believe that that doesn't mean you have to spend hours and hours and hours with your nose down. But when you've done a well-done job, and your father comes along and pats you on the shoulder and says, "Son, you did a good job," that's worth more than hours and hours of play. Remember the first time my father instructed me to drive a tractor. It was one of those old John Deere's that had a handle clutch on it. And he said, "Your brother is in school," and I was not quite 5 years old, and so he said, he put his tractor in first gear, and he said, "Now I'm going to get on the back, and I'm loading bales back there, and I want you to, when I tell you go, you push that handle ahead. and hold that wheel just as tight as you can, straight ahead. When I say stop, you pull that handle back. Do you understand? Well, I get on this little machine and go. And I push that handle ahead, and this great, huge, to me, monstrous machine moved. And I'm hanging on for dear life to this wheel. And then he calls, stop, and I pulled back. Well, before that day was over, I wouldn't have called the king my uncle. I was that happy to have been able to do something significant. And Father came up, and he put his arm over my shoulder, and he said, son, you did well. And you, mothers, need to learn how to do that with your daughters. Give them some. You don't have to give them a great, lengthy, long list of chores. But parenting means that a parent controls and guides and leads and trains their children. It's a sad commentary in the Bible. I don't know why the Spirit of God left it that way, but almost all of the men of the Bible that we read about who had children failed them. Some of them did well on occasion and failed on other occasions. Where did Isaac learn how to lie? Probably from a half lie from Abraham. And where did Jacob learn how to be a real liar? Probably from his father, who learned to be a half liar. I mean, things are passed on, and we have to be careful that when we speak to our children, we speak truth. Our words, I've got humor. I struggle with humor all the time because it likes to pop out, but especially sometimes like here. But I do not believe it's right for a man or a woman to say to their children, the boogeyman is going to get you, or some strange word to try and scare people. Because that's not true. And never lie to your children. Somebody says, look, if you don't come, I'm going to leave you here in Safeway supermarket. That's not true. Never lie to your children. Let all of us be sure that when I speak to my children, I am speaking truth. And they mean it. I have close family members that have made untrue statement. I have to call it. Untrue statement is a lie. And then they end up and they say, well, I'm just joking. That doesn't change a thing. That just means you can't trust your word. You never know when you're joking or not joking. Let your yes be yes and your no, no. And when you're speaking to your children in your home, the Bible tells us, we read it the other night, we speak of them of the word of God. When you sit down, when you rise up, when you walk, when you sitting in your home, the Bible is very clear. It's important that you and I, all of us, make sure that we are known for telling the truth. If a child comes to you and were to tell you a lie and then says, look, Dad, I'm just joking, what would you do? How would you respond if you've done the same thing yourself? How are you going to know when the child is telling the truth? And that's why we need to understand that there is, in parenting, we need to have the standard that we go by. Truth always needs to be spoken. Affection needs to be shown. But consistent responses to what's wrong needs to be consistent all the time, not just some of the time. And when you're trying to change a child's behavior, when something is wrong, do it quickly and consistently. Reinforce. That's the best way to be effective. Don't be too indulgent. Now, every child is different. I know that when you have little children, most of what they're going to do when they're babies, like most of them here, I've never seen a place for a long time that's got so many babies. Man. Arlington, Washington used to have the big prize for all the babies, but I think you got it here now. But whatever, these little babies will learn a lot of things just by being in your arms. But as they get older and you start to communicate and they become aware of the fact that they're under the authority of a mother and father, you be sure to be consistent on the way you speak to your children, the things that you expect of your children, the duties that you intend to have your children carry out, and when the time comes, reinforce it. If they don't do it right, have them do it again until it is right. God doesn't hate us when we fail. But there are times that He does chastise us because He loves us. So you can show approval by words. Like I said to you about my father, my grandson, he was 16, just got his driver's license. And he was at the time in his life when teenagers just use one word for a sentence. Yep, nope, okay. And that's about it. That was the full extent of their communicating skills. Yep, nope, okay. Or fine. Until he came to visit us. And I said, now, son, I said, you and I have got work to do. Okay. And I said, we've got some trees to pull down, and we got some chainsaw work to do, and we got some digging to do. And I said, the first thing we're going to do is we got a bunch of trees that we have to pull out, and I have a four-wheel drive Ford pickup. And so I said, I'm going to work the chain, and you're going to drive the truck. And his eyes almost popped out of his head. He said, really? I said, what did I just say? Well, yeah, but Grandpa, I've never driven a four-wheel drive truck. Well, I said, everybody starts once. And here we are in this safe place. So I said, I'm putting a cable around that tree over there. And when I say, you go ahead, I'll go like this. You put it in low gear and just ease into it. And then don't go jamming on the gas until I say, give it to her. When I say that, then you can whack her down as far as you want to go. Well, boy, he screwed down that window and stuck his elbow out. And I had the chain on. And I said, all right, go ahead. And he eased her into it. I said, give it to her. And all four wheels were spinning and overcame that tree. And he talked in a full sentence for the first time for years, as far as I... And he never stopped since. It's been like this. Because he found that I would trust him to do something that's meaningful. As your children get older, give them meaningful responsibilities. Give them something that is beyond what they have ever expected. And you'll find that it opens a lot of doors for those dark days that have been in the past. So, show your approval. And I told him, I said, son, you'll do all right. I said, except that when I say stop, you got to stop. Well, he said, I'm sorry, Grandpa, I forgot. I said, yeah, you know, except that we got to bring that thing all the way back around. So you take that truck and haul it all the way back. He said, really? I said, hey, what did I say? All right, Grandpa, I'll do that. You know, away he goes. But the reason I'm mentioning this is as your children grow, you understand that what you did when they are little isn't going to be the same as they get older. And don't expect every single child to be just alike. And we're going to come to that shortly now, because needed in family life is an understanding that our children are different. And you have to learn to be flexible, both husband and wife. Now, I had to learn this from my wife. I was kind of inflexible. You know, I had all the answers. Most men that are 21 or in their 20s have got all the answers. Sorry, fellas. I said some of you are still there. But by the time you get to 30, you start running into a few questions. And by the time you're 40, you don't realize you don't know very much at all. And when you're my age, you're starting over again. Once a man, twice a child. But we need to learn flexibility. And so I had laws. I had rules because I grew up in a very orderly, strict farm home where everything was done by the clock. We had five children. I'm the middle of five. My wife is the oldest of eight. And so when I expected my girls to do something, I expected it done now without question. And she said to me one day after our children were getting up, where they were assuming responsibilities like cleaning the dishes off the table. One would put them into a dishwasher and the other would take them out, and one would set, you know, and they vacuumed whatever they did. And so I thought that was supposed to be done all the time. But sometimes they had friends over. And so they would get chatting it off, and they were going to darting off to do something, and I said, "Now wait a minute, you got your work to do." And once or twice my wife said to me, "Look, they're running late. Give them a break." But she did it quietly to my ear. I had to learn that there are times that we take over their work, and that helps them to be much more accepting all the rest of the time. Can you imagine the first time that I, Dad, said, "Look, you girls run on, I'll take care of the dishes." They almost dropped. They couldn't hardly believe, "I'll take care of it, you go on." "Really?" Well, from then on, they were ready to do it all the time. It's interesting, sometimes a bit of flexibility goes a long, long ways. Now that takes us to where I want to read, really, in the book of Proverbs, please, in chapter 22. Proverbs 22, this is probably one you've been raised on, and I'm going to read it. Verse 6, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." Now, I'm sure that most of you have read this and understand that it isn't the common misunderstanding that some people have, that if they take their children to meetings and Sunday school and read the Bible to their children and teach verses and hymns and pray with them and arrange for the best schooling and all that, that when they finally grow up, even if they're not saved, someday they'll come back and get saved. Well, that's not really what he's saying. We have a problem sometimes in places like Newfoundland where people wonder about their children. They say, "Well, I can't understand. I mean, our child grew up in a Sunday school." No, your children didn't grow up in a Sunday school. They grew up in your home. They come to Sunday school for an hour a week. They didn't grow up in a Sunday school and don't learn all about the Bible at Sunday school. Some children do. That's the ones whose parents aren't believers. And it's surprising to me that oftentimes those that whose parents are not believers seem to get amazed at what their children bring home. One man told me one day, I asked him out to a meeting. He says, "No," he said, "I'm not going to be coming to the gospel meeting." He said, "I don't need to go there." Well, I said, "I understand that, sir, but," I said, "is there a reason?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "I get gospel all the time in my home." I said, "How's that?" He said, "My girl, 16 years old, she got saved down there in your meetings." Now he said, "Mr. Goff, if ever there's a Christian in this world, it's my daughter. Whatever happened to her has totally changed not only her, but our whole home." Now, hopefully the man will get saved. But that's not oftentimes, it doesn't happen that way. The training up is the same thing that we used to use when we trained horses. The first thing you put in a horse's mouth when they're young, especially when they're a little foal, is you put a soft rope in their mouth. And you put a little flavor on that rope that you put in their mouth. And you lead that little foal around until that foal is used to walking with that little rope through their back. Horses don't have teeth in the back of their mouth. That's why they put it in there. They got no teeth back there, so you just put that rope in there and they get the flavor and they kind of like it. And by and by, you change the rope for a bit. And the bit is there and you lead that horse around with that little foal around with a little bit. I know you see stories and pictures of bucking broncos. You train a horse by spending time with it. You got to smell like a horse almost. And you walk around with that horse and you by and by, that little bit in their mouth, they're as used to it as they are eating. And you don't have to slap them around. You just got to train them and keep at it and keep at it and keep at it. And it's the same thing when it comes to, I read this, I don't know whether this is honestly true, but I read it and I don't have any reason to doubt it. I read that way back in the old days, a Hebrew midwife used to put their finger into something that was sweet, like dates or grapes, and rub it on the gums of a little newborn child to get them first to suck. And then they would learn how to that sucking sensation started to move them to get nurture from their mother. And that's the idea of training. Take the time to get them used to what's right. The in the way, really, it's not their way, it's in the way. It's the idea of an eagle has its way, or a serpent has its way. Or we read it in about Proverbs 30 again, that the ship has its way, or the way of a man with a maid. Train the child in the way that you can lead them. Some will put their heels in and get really balky. So we have to take time to be with our children to train them. My father, when we were had a little bit of leisure time, would sit and tell us some of the stories and how things happened. He told us about the war. He would tell us about his family coming to North America. He would tell us about himself. He would tell us his testimony. He would tell us why we went to meetings. He would tell us why we got Bibles when we didn't even know how to read them. He told us why we were sitting in the back on a Sunday morning. My father and mother told us those things over and over again. And although I sat in the back seat on a Sunday morning until I became a believer, and even up until the time I was a Christian, I didn't question the fact that it was right that I would not be a participant of the Lord's Supper, because I was not a Christian. I knew that from my childhood. I was taught that. And so you train up a child in the way. Don't force them into your own mold, but it's the idea of training them in the way that they understand and learn. Now, my older brother was different than me. By the way, I mentioned to you about my older brother. He had a surgery yesterday. It was late last night, actually, when they got done. And they took a tumor off of his pancreas, so Lord willing, he'll survive. But my older brother was different than me. My older brother was a very quiet man. I haven't stopped talking since I was born, except sleep. And so some of us are different. My father knew how to deal with my mother, my brother, and he chose to do that. One of the few times my brother spoke too much, he had got his license, and we were traveling in our truck from one field to one farm to another. And my brother said, "Dad, you're supposed to double clutch when you come to the hills with those big loads." And Father never said anything. And we went down and up the next hill, and Dad just did it his old way. And my brother said, "Dad," he said, "you're supposed to double clutch when you come to those hills." And we got to the top of the hill, and Father pulled over the truck, and he said, "Get out." Now, we're about 15 miles away from where we were going. He said, my brother said, "What?" He said, "Open the door and get out." So, I was chatting it off, and all of a sudden everything went quiet. So, he opened the door and got out. Now, he said, "You walk. We're going to be expecting you in about 2.5 hours. And don't you dare ride, because," he said, "I got to watch." And he started his truck and drove off. Now, my brother and I both that day learned something very important. There's some things are our business, and some things aren't. My father trained us, sometimes a whole lot in a very short time. He knew that I was cocky, and he knew if my brother wasn't careful, he would get cocky. And so he killed two birds with one stone. I never did question my father's driving. But the reason I mention that is because there's different bents. Our children are different. And we have to, it's our responsibility to learn those differences. So start early. Don't wait until your children are in school, but when they get there, stay the course. And in spite of the pressures that come onto you from other people and their children, don't expect the impossible, but stay the course. And you model what you expect people to be like in your home. You live it out. I watched some homes that I've been in, and the Bibles come home, and they sit on the shelf, and the next time they're picked up is when they come back to meeting. And then when they go back home again, they go on the shelf, and the next time they're picked up, they come back to meeting. And actually, I've been in places and I've noticed Bibles left in the hall because people only use them in the meeting. Oh, you say maybe they have different ones at home. Well, I've stayed with people and they don't read the Bible. Now, your children won't read the Bible if you don't. Not likely. And they won't have a time of prayer if you don't. And they won't learn how to pray unless you teach them how to pray. And that's why the Lord made that point. Whenever we're training our children in the way they should go, discern their strengths. One of our children was a little older than the other when she got saved. And so when she was taught, we were teaching her to pray, she cried every time she started. We were down on her knees and she would cry when just before she could pray. And she would cry a bit when she prayed because she was pretty sensitive. Our other girl was saved around the same age, but she didn't. She was quite confident and assured. They were different people. But the one doesn't mean that one is more spiritual than the other. The one was more sensitive than the other. And so it made a difference even in the way they pray. But they have both taken the time to train their children to pray. And I said to them, as they're growing up, I said, your son now is of the age to shave. Let him lead the family sometimes in prayer. And that's why he is. When he's old or when he's able to shave, he's not going to depart from it. We sat at a Christmas dinner this year. My daughters, two daughters and their families, and half a dozen Haitians were there. Haitian refugees were there at the Christmas dinner. And my son-in-law said, what do you think, Dad? I said, I think it would be fine if you had your son give thanks for the food. And my 21-year-old grandson, who is now a mature man, university, his father said, his father still is at the head of the table. He said, son, I'd like you to give thanks for the food today. And clearly, and with compassion, and with genuine thanks, my grandson began to pray, thanking God for the Lord Jesus, for salvation, for the fact that Christ came into the world to save sinners. Some of the Haitians weren't believers. And he included them in his prayer, thank thee, Father, for having these friends with us here today who have lost so much. One of them has, or two of them, their families are out there under those blue tarps down there still in Haiti. They can't get out. And they can't get back to them. And those men and women, as they sat at that table and they rose their head up, they looked and said, thank you. Train up a child in the way he should go. And when he's old, he's not going to depart from it. So you really have to know your children. But accept the differences that they have, because all of them have them. But have your rules. If your children don't know the rules in a family, you have a serious problem. Okay, what are you going to do when your child comes to you and says, I was asked out by a boy to go to a restaurant for coffee. Can I go? At what age are you going to say yes? 14? 16? what age are you going to allow your daughter to go and have a coffee or have a milkshake with some boy? Some Christian boy. What age? Establish your plans and your rules. Let it be known, you and your wife together, or you and your husband together. Establish the plans and the rules that you're going to live by. And then stick with it. My wife and I did that. Except we had a certain age, and sure enough, a young Christian man came along. I mean, they used to circle around in a bunch, but this time one came, and I thought he was coming to get some spiritual advice from the preacher. And it wasn't. I found that out after he was there. He hung around too long, and I realized that he wasn't after spiritual advice at all. So my daughter came to me, and she said, "Dad," she said, they called him by name, he asked me, could we go down to McDonald's or someplace and have a hamburger and milkshake? Well, I said, "You're not old enough." Well, she said, "Dad, my birthday's tomorrow. And I'll be old enough tomorrow." Well, here's me getting ready to dig my heels in, my wife. We had agreed that, hey, what's the difference in 12 hours, really? And so he happens to be my son-in-law, and I love the guy. Didn't like him then, but I love him now. The reason I mentioned that, we did have rules, my wife and I, that we were going to live by. And we knew the rules, and our children knew the rules from when they were young. Now, I said to my daughters, how old are their kids? Haven't got to the age where they're dating yet. And I said, how old are you going to be before, or what's the time that you want them to come in, your children? Because we had 11. They said, they're going to be in at 10:30, or we're going to have the police on them. I said, well, isn't it strange that you always wanted to have at 12 o'clock midnight? Well, Dad, we didn't know any better. I said, but you knew the time. And we made it clear. I told them, I said, now 11 o'clock. And if you have a problem somewhere, phone. And if you can't find a phone, get as quick as you can to some, because by half an hour later, I'll be looking for you. And within an hour, I'll have the police looking for you. So I said, you be sure to make sure that those young fellows know that you're going to be in this house at 11. And they were. But it was clear. So when you make rules, make them clear. Set the parameters clear. And I said, you're not traveling to a conference with just one other guy. You're always going to go with a family or group. You're not traveling across the country just two of you together. So mark that down. It's not going to happen. Of course, now after they got married, that's their business. But until that time, we didn't allow that kind of thing, because there's too many things can go wrong. Set the rules. Set the limitations. Be clear so that there's no doubt in their mind what you expect, and make sure that there's no doubt in your mind what God expects, because you are responsible for those children. And try and answer the questions before they ask them or before they get caught. What happens? I told them, I said, what happens if something goes wrong with your vehicle? What would you do, by the way, if... I'll tell you this, because it's the best way to get it across. Out in Boston, there was a family, and they had a young son, and he was in his 19 or 20 years old, and he was quite interested in this Christian girl, and his father had one of these, back then it was called, they were a Dodge pickup called Little Red Wagon, or Red Wagon. It was a really nice-looking Dodge pickup. And he said, Dad, could I borrow the pickup to take his girlfriend out to a restaurant? His father said, well, he said, on one condition, you'll take me over the route first. And any instructions I give you, you'll have to act on. Oh, sure, Dad, fine. So they get in the truck, and he's going to take them the route that he's going to travel. And he says, oh, you got a flat, pull over. He said, there's no flat. He said, pull over. You got a flat tire. Now, this is on a freeway. And so the boy realized his father was giving him a test. So he pulled the pickup over. Now he said, what are you going to do? Well, he said, I've got to change the tire. So he said, get out and change the tire. But it's not flat. He said, get out and change the tire. And the father sat in the pickup. And the boy went out and for the first time in his life on the side of a freeway changed his tire. And he got back in and he was kind of dirty. And so the father said, drive on. And all of a sudden he said, boy, there's an ambulance back there. Come pull over. And he pulled over and did the right thing. And then he said, and then the father reached over as they just turned into one of the busy streets and he shut the key off. He said, the truck's quit. What are you going to do? Are you going to leave the girl sit in the pickup? Are you going to have her walk with you? Are you going to stay here? What are you going to do? By the time that boy had that half day lesson, the father was quite sure he knew the rules. Give your children a chance to learn. And take the time to teach them. Let them know the rules and the limitations. Be clear. And when they do it right, let them know they've done it right. And encourage them. And if they do it wrong, make them do it over again. Until they get it right. That's part of what we do in training the children in the way they should go. I have given to you a few things here. I'm just going to mention this before we conclude tonight. Lord willing, we're going to look at tomorrow how some more about a family portrait. I would call them a family portrait. But you remember, and I hope I'm getting this across, that you need to remember how faith develops. It develops through you. It develops by parents agreeing, planning, establishing rules, setting the guidelines, knowing what's coming next, and making sure that the children are not left without a clear understanding of what is expected by you and by God. What about your children if they're not saved? What are you going to do then? What if your boy starts to smoke? Or what about if he comes home and you can smell in his breath some beer? What are you going to do? What have you and your wife decided? What are you going to do if your 13-year-old girl is in a school class and the class teaches dancing? Well, I ran into that. My parents told me, they said, look, and my brothers and sisters, we all came into this, and they said, look, if there are questions that are too hard for you to answer, you let the teacher know that we'll come and explain it to them. So they wanted to teach dancing at the school we went to. I grew up the early part of my years in a little country school with 18 children in 8 grades. I was always first in my class and was always last, same class. But when I got to high school, all of a sudden I'm going to a place where there's 1,200 students. Can you imagine coming from 18 to 1,200? And one of the things they taught in grade 9, they wanted you to, well, they had these school dances. So they said, and girls invite guys to dances too, not just guys to girls. So anyway, this came up. And I said, no, I'm not going to any school dance. Well, why not? Now, I wasn't a believer yet. I said, well, it's because I don't want to. What? Are you paralyzed or what's wrong with you? So when I got home, I told my parents. And father said, that's okay. He said, I'll go down and talk to the teacher. And he went down and he told the teacher that had this, you know, had this class that they wanted us all to go to. He said that we've taught our children that there's too many things go wrong when young boys and young girls start putting their arms around each other. There's too many things that can affect the rest of their life by those practices. So we have chosen to tell our children that they're not going to dance. And not only that, he said, I know and you know that out back of the school there will be beer and smoking going on. And he said, I want to preserve my family from that. No, he said. And the teacher said, thank you, Mr. Goth, to my father. Thank you for coming and telling it. We will not insist on your boy learning how to dance. So, what am I to do? Everybody else, all so many in the class are out there doing whatever they do, and I'm sitting on a chair off in the side reading history. Mind you, I got better grades than all the rest of them too, so that worked out all right. But the reason I'm mentioning that is there are times that you're going to have to reinforce your children and back them up when the hard times come. Now, you say we're trying to avoid that? Good for you. But there will always come a time in your life and the life of your family where you are going to have to set the laws and you're going to have to reinforce them for people that are outside of your family so that they will understand why you don't do or allow your children to do what other people do. Our world is getting worse. These little wind-up cigarettes that they used to have in high schools, now they sell them on school buses. And they'll sell them out back in the schoolyard to junior high students. And so they're starting to fly like a bird on marijuana or hashish by the time they're 12 and 14 years old. Preserve your children. Stand up for them. Give them the courage to know and give them the assurance that father and mother are in our court all the time. They're not going to let us down. They're going to back us up and support us. And if anything goes wrong, let them know that they can always come to you. And you're not always going to be judgmental, but you're going to help them get through the hard times. Father, we pray.